Welcome to the Joy of Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Taylor. On this podcast, we explore the passion and purpose of leadership. Join us to explore lessons in leadership that demonstrate how you can live in the center of God's will. All right. Hey, it is a pleasure to have Ryan Bomberger of the Radiance Foundation here with us. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here with you.
I've now had the privilege of hearing you talk three times here on the campus of HCA. Yep. Phenomenal talks, real challenges for our students over some pretty huge critical issues.
Yeah.
Before we jump into some of those issues, I'd love to just hear, hey, tell us a little bit about the Radiance Foundation. Tell us the good work that you're doing. Explain to us kind of the impact that you're making in the Christian sphere.
Sure. My wife Bethany and I started the Radiance Foundation here in Georgia, in Alpharetta, Georgia. We lived there for 9 years. It's where our family started, and it's where Radiance Foundation was birthed.
Oh, cool.
And we really felt compelled to help equip Christians to engage in culture-shaping issues and to equip them with the words that they need to actually talk about these issues and replace the fear of engaging with the confidence in knowing, okay, here is the biblical worldview, here is the truth. And so since then, we've been able to create all kinds of tools, whether they're videos, our weekly op-eds, graphics, our multimedia presentations, which we've been able to do all around the world for years and years, to be able to illuminate that every human life is God-given purpose. So we're constantly engaged. There's never a lack of something to do. I wish there were the day I woke up and like, oh, what am I going to do for the next 9 or 10 hours? No, that never happens. I mean, obviously we have a culture that's so desperate for, breakthrough.
Right.
And so we're constantly engaged. So whether it's billboard campaigns, whether it's submitting research for front of the court briefs, or whether it's writing our children's books to help equip parents to engage in the crazy topics, like we have to convince children that he is he and she is she, things like that. But we're constantly creating stuff that's fearless, factual, and freeing.
I love that. So a big part of what we do is, obviously, we're working with kids, right? We're working with teenagers. We're working with young people. One of the biggest messages, really kind of the central aspect of this show, is the idea of how do we activate our role as being ministers of the gospel, no matter what field we're in, right? No matter what our training and background has been. And so I'm intrigued. I mean, I've been all over your site the last week or so, and seeing the graphics that you guys are doing, such like unbelievably good work, the videos that you guys are making. So we both graduated from Messiah College, go Falcons.
Yes.
back in 1993.
So long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. you then went on and there you were a business, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then you went on to Regents University. What did you study there?
I studied directing, editing, TV, and film,
okay,
as well as journalism.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's really where you got the kind of the skill set, the knowledge for you to do just the high-end graphics, high-end movies. I mean, you're kind of the guy singing in a lot of the stuff, and your kids are singing in the lot back of the lot. I mean, it's really impressive, but that's where you got it from?
Well, yes and no. I used to work at the radio station at Messiah College,
and that's what
I did, hours and hours of sound production. So that was awesome. I had a graphics minor at Messiah.
Okay.
But that was before computers were really
that's right.
advanced. I remember, I think it took 15 minutes for the computer to start.
Yes.
And a program called Lumina.
Listen, our freshman year, right? It was a bit like we got the first computer lab.
Yes.
On campus. I mean, kids nowadays, they wouldn't even know that could have even been a possibility.
You had to
but
go somewhere.
Yeah, like I was in Whitmer dorm, right? And we had the first computer lab. It was a bit, and you'd turn it on and make that loud noise,
and wait.
And that sounded like high tech for us. Yeah. So you were definitely on the front wave of that, right?
Yes. Yes. And I've always felt that way, which is why I also pulled way too many all-nighters, which started a lifestyle and a lifetime of really bad habits of not sleeping, but wanting to continue to create as a creative. But it was Regent University that definitely kind of brought all those things together. Years and years of also working in radio.
Okay.
Messiah College. And it was like God knew that I was going to need just all of these elements from the things that I had been studying, the things,
right,
I had been experiencing to do the work that we do now through the Radiance Foundation.
Okay. So I am like a pretty big discusser of calls. Was that call already on your heart? Like when, At what point in time did you feel like you were going to use your skill set for the Lord? And I know now you're doing it full time, but at that time you were doing it corporately in some different ways, but you can still do it for the Lord. Like, when does the call activate for you? At what point in time? Do you remember?
Well, it's interesting because I wasn't exactly clear on what my calling was, except I knew that I loved working with kids. I worked in a lot of inner city outreaches, and I spent a lot of time in youth leadership for years and years. Loved working with kids, and the best way in connecting with them, one, was entertaining them, but I wanted to entertain them with something of lasting value. So I remember, for instance, one of my youth groups, I did this extensive talk show, and we did this multi-camera setup with like TV production cameras, that type of thing.
How old were you at that point?
That was in my 20s.
Was it really?
Way back when.
Okay.
And so I knew that God had called me to be able to reach people with the creativity they had given me.
Okay.
I just wasn't exactly crystal clear on what that looked like. Right. But I was always carrying out different aspects of it, whether it was working in youth ministry, whether it was, you know, leading conferences. It wasn't until I married the love of my life, Bethany, and her educational background, my creative background, that we knew and understood so clearly what our calling was in launching the Radiance Foundation, to take all these years of experience and throw them into this singular ministry to do what God created us both to do together. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this misconception, certainly among teenagers, but honestly, there's a misconception with adults where, like, you have to figure out what you're going to do 17 steps ahead, right? Like, you've got to know where it is. And I think I was probably, like, analysis paralysis, you know, guilty of that when I was younger as well. You know, what I try to remind our students is that just be faithful in the next step. Like, God's going to call you to the next step. If you're actually willing to go into the next step, God will give you another step.
Right.
You're faithful, they're going to the next step. I mean, you know, here we are a little bit older in life. And listen, I still kind of wonder what I'm going to do when I grow up. You know, like I'm still wondering. I wonder if God has another chapter that's totally different for me, you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, like, that's the mindset. When my wife and I got married 31 years ago, we just made that determination. Like, we were going to go anywhere. We're going to do anything. We're going to do it at any time, whatever God calls, we're going to do, you know? And you guys have done that. Like, it's neat to watch your story unfold chapter by chapter where you're understanding it, you know? What does it look like for you guys to make the decision to leave jobs where you probably actually got a paycheck and to step into this very entrepreneurial mix where I suspect you didn't have a paycheck? What does that look like? Take me to those emotions. Take me to that decision process.
Terrifying. It was insane. In fact, I left my, let me go back. When my wife and I got married, she knew that she wanted to stay home. She no longer wanted to teach in public or private school. She wanted to stay home with our daughter because I was married and adopted her biological daughter, my daughter now, Radiance. And she wanted to be at home with her because we know that stay-at-home moms never stay at home. But so we're operating on one income. I was working for a company at that time. And so there was a point at which I was kind of forced out. I was given a job that was not my skill set whatsoever. And it was kind of a demotion. And so that's when we decided to step out. We'd already finished the paperwork for the 501c3 for Radiance Foundation. And it was terrifying. I mean, many people in our life at that time were saying, why are you leaving the security of a full-time job and all, you know, healthcare benefits and all that stuff to do something that you don't know anything about? We knew nothing about running a nonprofit, but we knew that we were called to do this. And the fact that, you know, both Bethany and I were so aligned and so in agreement with this, but it was the scariest thing I'd ever done. Mm-hmm. I mean, my family background, our family owns a retail business store, Bomberger store in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. And it's like a multi-million dollar business. Yeah. And I understood it, you know, it was like a 9-to-5 sort of job. So some of my family didn't exactly understand what we were doing. And what I did have was a severance package from my job, which gave us 3 months.
Okay.
And we thought, okay, God,
if you're going to work, if but this work quick.
Works, yes. And so it was those 3 months which were really, really trying because we had no other income. Mm-hmm. And immediately God blessed what we were doing to the point where I never had to go on welfare. which on paper, it didn't make sense.
Right.
Because on paper, it looked like this is impossible. These numbers don't line up. This doesn't add up. And yet God provided every step of the way. I still continued to freelance as a creative director. Mm-hmm. So I still got that income. But about 3 or 4 years into Radiance Foundation, you know, full-time salary for me. And then a few years ago, my wife is also full-time salaried. And so we knew that we were following God's calling for us. And it was just a matter of like, okay, my brother-in-law is a pastor. Love my brother-in-law, Nick. And he says, you can be the person like the disciples in the boat. You can be the ones who are, you know, the golden bucket, and you're taking the water and you're throwing it out the side of the boat. Or you can be the one who's actually going to step outside the boat. And that's what we were doing.
Right.
Yes, it was terrifying, but it's next to salvation, marrying my wife, having our children, the best decision that we have ever made, because that's we were able to do the ministry that we were designed to do.
Yeah. And you know, for anybody listening, like it's the call is the central aspect. Like when God has called you to do something, you have a decision to make. God gave us free will, right? It's whether we're going to respond to that call or not. Now, sometimes people have half-baked ideas minus the call, and then they're shocked that things fail.
Right.
The difference is you were called to do this. And so if God's going to call you out, he's going to equip you for it. You know, he's going to make sure. Now, he's not going to give you everything, because he wants to make sure that you're relying on him.
Oh, yes.
You know, I know that I took a gap year after high school. I was a new believer and so really it was a great year. I worked for a jewelry company during that period of time. It was a great season of life, really. It was something where prior to that point, I think I might have maybe even gone into business or done something in that realm if I hadn't taken that gap year. I got into it. You know, I enjoyed it. I was pretty good at it. And when I made the decision to go into college, where I went into Messiah College, you know, here I am, a very new believer in this setting. And I just felt like God was calling me to do something else. And I literally sat down and made a pro and con list. And I the things that I'm really passionate about, I really came to the point where I was just enamored by God's word. Like, I loved God's word. I loved being in there. I loved reading in books. I'm a bit geeky by nature. And so I really love reading. And I really liked working with kids. I really enjoyed that. God gave me an opportunity very early at a church that didn't have a high school group. When we moved from Canada to the United States, they did have a middle school group. And so myself and three other high schooler kids basically ran the middle school program. And I fell in love with it. And that is literally how God directed me. And I chose to be a Christian school teacher later on, because my field is English literature. So I like books, I like kids, and that's where we went. But I take this gap year, I finish out college, and I feel like God's really calling me into education. And in my gap year, literally my last bonus was $200 more than my whole year, first year's salary as a teacher. And I remember thinking, this is nuts. Like, this does not work on the calculator. But if God's call precedes the hardship, you know, he's going to do it. Like, you know, he's going to bring us through that challenge, which is there, you know. And you were united with your bride in that. And the Radiance Foundation is, again, off of your guy's first child, Radiance. You call her Ray Ray. She's at Liberty University, right?
She is awesome. At Liberty, yes.
Okay. Radiance, hey, if you're listening, you're studying to be a teacher. In 2 years, I'm going to be looking for your resume. So just so you know, Ray Ray, okay?
This place is amazing.
All right. So let's talk kind of about how you have, God has really given you some opportunities to be engaging culture on some pretty large scale spheres. And so you're pretty frequent on Fox News. You've had some opportunities there. You've been a pretty firmly entrenched in the Colson Center.
Yes.
Walk me through some of those opportunities and explain those.
God has a way of enabling opportunities. Just when you're faithful and you're seeking him, doors just open. That's what's happened with us. When we first started, we knew nobody in the pro-life, pro-family, pro-liberty spaces at all. It was interesting. I remember emailing a number of organizations, and as a creative, I offered to do some rebranding. I offered to do some creative stuff for free, just so I could get my foot in the door there. With no one responded. No one. And literally, it's interesting, because after a year at Radiance Foundation, I had all these major organizations coming to us on, you know, having us do some of their messaging, having engage in all these projects, because collaborating with us, because they loved how we message.
Right.
And so we didn't really know what we were doing when we started, but it's really amazing how God has opened up opportunity after opportunity. So Colson Center, I mean, Johnstone Street, that the whole crew there.
Superhero in faith right now. I mean, an absolute superhero in faith. Yeah.
And you got Family Research Council with Tony Perkins. It was amazing to me just over the years to be connected with people and with organizations, Christian organizations that haven't capitulated to the culture, where there are so many Christians, so many Christian organizations, so many nonprofits, so many churches that have caved. And so to be able to work with these organizations, to be invited to speak at summits and conferences and to do these collaborative projects, it really was such a confirmation of, yes, it all seemed crazy and terrifying then, but God knew exactly what he was doing as he was weaving together all these things to lead to our work through the Radiance Foundation. And honestly, things continue to open up. It's not even as if we are actively seeking any of these partnerships.
Right.
We just get calls out of the blue. We get this opportunity. Oh, we really need you for this, you know, this 10-week-long multi-city conference, and we would love you and your wife to keynote the event. Okay. Of course, we're always seeking God. Do we want to do this? Do we? Because we also have 4 children. One is in college, but the other 3 are still homeschooled. Right. So our family is our highest priority. That's our first ministry. Right. But honestly, I just consider these just God-sized moments that we just continually step into. And it's really amazing how God is able to use us.
Right.
And I love it. And as a creative, I've never felt so fully tapped for everything that's within me. And the work that we do through the Radiance Foundation, for years I used to, when I was in the ad agency world, I'm like, why am I doing this? I almost looked at the gifts that I had as a curse, because I never felt like I could really fully utilize them. I was never felt like I was using them effectively. And now I'm like, okay, you're tapping me for everything that I have. And there is such a fulfillment in that. I can't imagine any other outlet for what we do, and for what God's given me. And it is God. I consider everything that he gives to me from a creative standpoint as a divine download. That's what it is.
I wish so much that I understood God beforehand. We all tend to understand God better in hindsight, right? We look back and we say, wow, the Lord was orchestrating my path. He was putting this skill set in my hands and in my heart and in my mind. And then you're watching how the skill set ends up getting applied to the very real world, right? Yeah. Go through some of the opportunities specific, like I know that you've been on Fox News, but I mean, I know that scrolling on the bottom of your site is all these different things that you've been a part of. You might just kind of go, listen, this isn't about vainglory at all, but I'm just so intrigued by it. Some of the opportunities that you've had, give me kind of, you know, maybe the top few that you've had that have been so intriguing.
Sure. Which even just the start of our organization as a fledgling 501c3, we decided we're going to take on the issue of race and abortion here in Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. And I remember driving down to Macon, Georgia from Alpharetta because I wanted to meet with the leaders of Georgia Right to Life. Cause I had this idea. I had this entire campaign designed and no one was returning calls. And I love Georgia Right to Life, but no one was returning my calls. So I drove down to a conference they were having, and I figured during a break, I'm going to introduce this. Sure enough, I have a few minutes, and the director at that time looked at it and goes, oh my word, this is amazing. We happen to have 80 billboards in the Atlanta area. Let's use your billboard. Let's do this. Wow. So we didn't have a dime to our name when we started. I mean, I think we had $37 in our account when we started. We certainly couldn't pay for 80 billboards. But entirely free, the campaign that I created was launched, and we got massive, massive mainstream media attention. New York Times, USA Today, CNN, MSNBC, the list goes on and on, Fox. Interesting, Fox was the only one that didn't run the story at that
really?
Time.
Really? Yes. No kidding.
Yeah, I don't hold it against them.
Okay.
But, or maybe I do. But that launched us into so many different opportunities, not only media opportunities and be able to literally reach millions, but also opportunities then to speak, because we went from an organization that no one heard of to all of a sudden they're inviting us. We're getting 150 plus inquiries to speak every year. Mm-hmm. And we'd only accept so many, but those are just some of the things. Being able to speak at Harvard, when I and for those people who ever think that you're not good enough, you're not adequate enough, first of all, get that lie out of your mind. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's an Ivy League school. I'm not worthy. Yeah. Well, I went there and honestly it was the most, the most, I'm not putting down the students, but the atmosphere was the most ignorant, the most arrogant I had ever witnessed in a on a college campus. But yet God continued to use opportunity after opportunity and provide that and allow us to be able to speak truth to all these issues: abortion, adoption, fatherlessness, poverty, racism, free speech, religious liberty, all of these things. And the response was amazing, because I would get students after, like on college campuses, after the event, who said, well, I hated you when you arrived and I wanted to hate you, but I've never heard that perspective before. And so getting these opportunities, whether media opportunities or being sued, as I mentioned in one of the presentations about being sued by the NAACP. I mean, you can't tell from the microphone and from the sound here, but I'm brown. I'm mixed. All kinds of ethnicities in my veins. But I'm mixed, and I was sued by the NAACP for actually parroting their name. I called them the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People. And they didn't like that. They sued us for 2 years in federal court. That was an avenue for all kinds of organizations to say, wait, who is this guy? What are they doing? Who are these people? What's this Radiance Foundation all about? And it just continued to open up more opportunities for us to be able to speak speak the truth, not our truth, because there's not my truth, truth. Yeah, just the truth. But be able to speak the truth in so many different venues. So I can't say, oh, yeah, it was me. No, it was so clearly God connecting us in ways from people who knew nobody, had no money. We had 3 kids at the time and 2 laptops. And God's like, I got this.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned, like when he calls you, he's going to equip and enable you to do what he's called you to do.
That's right. Your story, you've chosen to hammer away at, you know, super simple topics like gender and race, abortion. And so you've jumped into this melee. But for the audience who hasn't been here on our campus over these last few days, tell us a little bit about your story. I think that just it informs everything, and it kind of takes something from black and white to full color, like where we can really understand how God utilized your personal story to inform this story.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely one of the stories our organization is predicated on. I am the 1% that is used 100% of the time to justify abortion. There are many who have told me to my face that I should have been aborted. See, I'm one of those exceptions cases, if you will. My birth mom experienced the horror and the violence of rape. And even though she was a victim of that violence, she didn't make me a victim of the violence of abortion. And I'm forever grateful. Those are my beginnings. I obviously was not humanly planned, but yet she was courageous enough to not only give me life, but give me the incredible gift of adoption to be able to grow up in a phenomenal family, the Bomberger family, not exactly your typical American family, of 15, where I grew up with 6 brothers, 6 sisters, 10 of us were adopted. So it's interesting when you talk about the issue of abortion, people will often ask, well, why do you care? You're a guy. Well, one, I'm human. That's why I care. But it's also because of how I came to be, which is why when people challenge me, having been conceived and raped, but adopted and loved, why are you fighting for others with stories like yours? And I'm thinking, how could I not? I'm the most marginalized among the marginalized. How could I not fight for them? And so that's my background story. I grew up in the family of 15, grew up on a farm in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, the Amish. And well, you know, from going to Sire.
I do,
I'm definitely not Amish. And I've been asked that. I remember so many times, like in Oregon State, oh, are you Amish? No. I like electronics way too much. But that was my upbringing. I had a mother and a father who loved the mess out of all of us, who loved Jesus. Their faith was genuine, and I'm so grateful for that. And they endured 13 teenagers.
Unbelievable.
Just contemplate that. Yeah. 13 teenagers.
What does your house look like for that?
Some people would think that it would be chaos. It actually wasn't. But I guess I grew up in it, so it seemed normal to me. But we, you know, lived in a big farmhouse. My parents didn't have a lot of money, even though we owned a store, which eventually became, extremely successful one. But growing up, didn't have a lot of money. We lived on a farm. We weren't farmers, but I guess they call it homesteading now. But we had to eat, and how do you feed 13 kids? So we had a massive garden, and we had cows and sheep and pigs and whatnot. We had, at one point, we shared, like, the boys, all four boys in one room, and there were probably about four bedrooms at the time, and then they expanded. Every year, there were more bedrooms added, but it wasn't chaos. Sometimes people think, oh, 15 people, 13 kids. And it wasn't just us. It was our neighborhood kids. There were usually 20 to 25. You couldn't afford to
have chaos with that many kids. Well, so you'd have to be pretty organized and structured as a mama.
My mom definitely was, but she also needed her peace. There were times she would lock us out of the house and just go play. Go play with the streetlights. Come on. But, I mean, she had to maintain her sanity. But it just was all so normal to me. And the beautiful thing was, we didn't even realize during even those early days that we were having impact on kids around us, kids at church. I had family DM me on Facebook about how they would watch our family come into church all the time. And this girl said, I have always wanted a family like that.
Wow.
Never realizing when you're going to be impacting somebody else. And then you're going to be part of their testimony. And so, growing up, I mean, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy being mixed, being white and black, and dealing with some people, and I'm not trying to typify an entire group of people, but some people who, you know, their ignorance and their racism, that was hard to deal with at times. But our parents really helped us navigate through all of that. And honestly, our family was such an influence in our community that people saw race, and I'm putting that in quotes because we're all one human race, but people saw race differently. I mean, incredibly differently because of our family.
That's right.
And imagine if my parents didn't live out the calling that they knew was placed in their hearts.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have been able to be that agent of change in our community as well. So
race feels like a subject until it becomes a friendship.
Yeah.
And then it's no longer a subject.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole thing, right? It's, you just have to be able to tear down those barriers.
Right.
But your family lived that out
in a
big and remarkable ways. That impacted the way that you now live out your family, your family as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm married to the love of my life, Bethany. Her maiden name is Kouplitis. She is Greek and Italian and some German in there. And she does not come from a background of adoption. In fact, when we were engaged, she was concerned that I wouldn't be able to love her biological daughter, now our daughter, Radiance, the same that I would love our biological children. I said, have you met me?
Well, that's right.
I mean, I'm the favorite in the family, and I was the first adopted. Of course, I would love, and I love her just as much as I love my son, Makai, and our younger daughter, Aaliyah, and our youngest son that we both adopted, Justice. So we have four kiddos, ages now 14 through 20, and that we've homeschooled all but 1.5 years of their life. We've homeschooled them. And Bethany, you know, I mentioned, or maybe I didn't mention, she's an educator. Mm-hmm. She taught both public and private school for 13 years before becoming a homeschooling mama for 17. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's amazing that our kids, their extended family is just, it's kind of like your school here. Mm-hmm. Just a beautiful mixture of people from, you know, every different hue and all kinds of backgrounds. That's our extended family. That's our family. Our kids are mixed. They are involved in our ministry, Radiance Foundation. So they get to travel with us all over the place. They get to, you know, use their talents. I don't force them. They actually offer. They love it. And I love when they, you know, when God's given them a certain skill set and we're able to employ that. But our home life is very different because we run this nonprofit. And some of it, it's like, okay, we're seeking God. We're not sure exactly where this is going. And these incredible doors open up like, okay, we're doing this. So our kids have been able to watch us walk out this life of faith.
Obedience.
And being obedience, lived out. Yes. And I, of course, the only thing that will make me feel successful as a father is that my children love Jesus above all else. And that's what Bethany and I are dedicated to do in homeschooling them. That was our particular choice. I know there are great options too for private and public school. But where we live, it was the best option. We live in Loudoun County, Virginia, if anyone's heard of Loudoun County. Always in the news for the wrong reasons. But honestly, our family is really a testament to God's goodness, to God's patience, to God's redemption. Had my birth mom not made that decision however many years ago, my family wouldn't even exist. So
that's right. Let's jump into the philosophy of kind of how you lead the Radiance Foundation. I really love the idea. A lot of people could look at you and say, "Oh, this is a Christian activist," I love how you say, hey, we're not an activist, I'm a factivist.
Yes.
It enters into kind of the DNA of your organization. Walk us through what that means, but also how did that come about? Because I would doubt that's something you just tripped over accidentally. Tell me about that.
Well, let's see. Everything that we do, of course, is predicated on our faith in God and on loving people. 1 Corinthians 13:6, which says love does not delight in evil, it rejoices in the truth. And trying to, okay, what does that mean? How do you rejoice in the truth? How do you actually lead people to be able to rejoice in the truth? Well, you have to know the truth. Mm-hmm. And not just the eternal truths, but these temporal truths. And so I realized in a lot of conversations about some of these culture-shaping issues that, one, there wasn't a whole lot of creativity involved. Mm-hmm. And two, I felt like it stopped short of I guess, the persuasive nature it should have had. And so, I mean, our philosophy was always trying to create content that was a little unconventional, that would help to recast an issue or reframe an issue for people. And that's a lot of what we do. I mean, in marketing and the advertising world, that's what you're always trying to do. You're reframing something. You're trying to create a desire for a product or service. And I felt like our philosophy was, one, we were acknowledging where these needs were, and then, okay, we want to create something to specifically address that and create something that resonates with people. And a large part of what resonates with people are stories. And both Bethany and I have these incredible stories. People on our staff, our board members, I mean, we have a birth mother who has just a phenomenal story of how God rescued her through adoption, rescued her, not to mention rescued her son, but changed her life, saved her life. So we know that stories are so important. But as factivists, we try to fuse the emotional with the evidential. We live in before I started Radiance Foundation, I would say that I probably was a little bit more of an activist. I was a little more drawn to the emotional side mm-hmm. of things mm-hmm. and wasn't as compelled to understand the facts of a situation and that context. And I realized the dangerous consequences of watching certain movements, particularly the Black Lives Matter movement, where I was seeing, okay, there is a perception of injustice, and yet there is so much emotionalism in that. And then there are deadly consequences. We saw that with the $2 billion of damage, for instance, cities all across the country during the summer of 2020. And I thought, this cannot be how a Christian approaches these issues. We should be the ones who actually understand the context of an issue, so that brings clarity, so then we can act responsibly in our pursuit of injustice. You know, Proverbs 31:8-9, one of my favorite verses. It says, you know, be a voice for the voiceless, ensure justice for those being oppressed. Or in some versions, it says for those being crushed. How do we do that if we don't truly understand the underpinnings of certain things? So that's what drives us. I mean, we do thousands of hours of research, and that comes out in our op-eds, and that comes out in our graphics, our memes, comes out in our videos, but it comes out in ways that are a little different, that are creative, and that are always life-affirming. Mm-hmm.
I was actually really taken with the idea of how numeric your presentation was, that you it was very much, you were presenting a lot of facts and that you just can't dispute, like the number. Sometimes organizations want to tell certain stories that aren't factually true. They're anecdotally at best, but they're not factually true. And so you've really stepped in to tell stories from a numeric perspective, really, like really presenting facts rather than an emotion. And I so appreciate that. As we look at some of the issues that you are covering, I mean, I think we kind of anticipate conflict or mm-hmm. people to stand against us who are coming from a secular perspective and, you know, not a Christian perspective. But I would suspect you also face some real pressures from people who would consider themselves Christians.
Yes.
What does that look like? Was that a surprise?
Initially, yes.
Okay.
Because when we started the Radiance Foundation, I thought, oh my word, all these people are going to love our story. They're going to love my story. They're going to love Bethany's story. And, you know, what's not to love? I mean, here you've got this mixed guy, grew up in a diverse family of 15, and it's got this adoption story. Oh my word, I learned really quickly that you develop enemies quickly in media who want to characterize you a certain way, which happened a lot. I'm like, but wait, I'm not. I remember one article that called me a racist Southern bigot. Like, first of all, just because you're Southern doesn't mean you're a bigot, but I'm not even Southern. I'm from Pennsylvania. And how am I a bigot? There were so many things lobbed at me. I mean, horrible things said to me. And I realized right away, it's not enough just to have this compelling story, but it is what compels me to share that story.
That's good.
And so I found out that even secular environments on campus, I mean, I've spoken in a lot of colleges, probably about 100 colleges, I guess, by now. And some I'm welcome and I'm invited. It's very warm and hospitable. And others, you know, like UT Austin, smoke bombed out of. I've been canceled. I've been canceled more, though, from Christian organizations.
Why
than
is
from
that?
Secular. Oh, because why they don't that? Have a grasp of what a biblical worldview is. Here's what blows my mind. For instance, I'm not going to mention the names of these places. Yeah. I would like to, but I'm not going to. But I've been canceled after, for instance, I was going to address race. I have this one presentation called Race, Reality, and I'm sorry, Race, Racism, and Reality. And they told me, well, you're kind of too controversial. And I'm thinking, I'm from a diverse background. My whole life has been enmeshed in diversity, at least what people call diversity. How am I controversial? Because I have a biblical worldview, and that's been
that's
the problem.
What it is.
I have a biblical worldview in race. I have a biblical worldview in sexuality. I have a biblical worldview in life. And so it gets me uninvited. It gets me canceled. Wheaton was one of the worst examples. I went there and I did Black Lives Matter in and out of the womb. That was the presentation. Afterward was demonized by the dean of student life, that particular department, that said, I made students, staff, and faculty of color feel unheard, underrepresented, and unsafe on campus. How does a brown person bringing a perspective about how Black Lives Matter, how does it make someone feel underrepresented and unheard? It was so crazy to me that a Christian institution would go to such great lengths to demonize me. And I realized, you know what? This is a spiritual battle because they're not really attacking me.
Right.
They are attacking the truth. And so, yeah, I was initially shocked being treated different ways by certain ways by Christian organizations. It's no longer surprising to me, but it is heartbreaking because we are supposed to be the light of the world. And yet so many of these organizations and so many churches actually invite the darkness.
Right. That's what I would love to say, that I've got to the point where that doesn't surprise me. It still surprises the tarnation out of me. It really does, where I expect people who come from a background that is secular in nature, you know, I expect what we do to kind of be offensive. Right. It's strange for me though, when I jump in with Christians, and what it really comes down to is that they don't want to use God's word as their basis for truth. They want their own prerogative. They want a political stance. They want something they heard on the news. They want their emotions largely, to make their decision. And when we no longer have a fixed set of standards that define truth, then there is no truth, right? And so now we enter into a world where you do you is the mantra, right? It's this idea where truth, there is no more truth if there isn't a fixed truth.
Right.
Then there's just a subjective reality.
Right.
And that's what has been really surprising to me, that you know, working in Christian education and largely just my nature kind of is to challenge the status quo, always in relationship to our further alignment with Christ.
Right.
But it does surprise me, you know, like there are certain battles I'm ready to pick, and sometimes those battles don't come. Like, you know, I've chatted with folks in different educational realms that are not Christian in nature, and been, you know, pretty bombastic in my faith, like just seeing if I get a rise out of people sometimes, you know, and they're like, in, oh, cool. You know, like, I love that perspective. You know, I was chatting with a Muslim the other day, and I was chatting with a Hindu the other day, like, hey, love that. You know, you do you. And there it's not a problem.
Right.
And sometimes in Christian circles, it isn't. How do we get the Christian church, large C, how do we get them to understand a truly Christian worldview? Like, where does it come from? What's the essence of it?
Reading the word.
Yeah.
And not accepting anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes lovingly challenging your pastor. I mean, there are a lot of pastors who actually mean well, and they're trying to navigate some of these things, and they take some missteps. And sometimes if we can lovingly address these things with our pastors, but in large part, it's because people are sitting there and being silent mm-hmm. when they know that what it was just said or what was just presented or what was just done was completely wrong. But we don't want to offend. We don't want to, and this mindset, we don't want to be divisive. Truth is divisive.
Right.
It's the very nature of it, separating fact from fiction. And so it's a shame that in the church we have so many people who are afraid to actually address these things, or we have so much of the population that's not actually aware of what's truly going on mm-hmm. to know how to counter it. And that's our fault.
That's right.
It's our fault for not, you know, delving into
these issues. We haven't put tools in their toolbox.
Right.
We just haven't.
And that's, I mean, we can't have, you know, shepherds misleading the sheep. And I see that so much. And it's interesting because sometimes people say, well, why are you preaching what you do? You know, you're just preaching to the choir. Well, sometimes the choir doesn't know the song.
Mm,
so I have no problem both preaching to the choir or at least teaching the choir. And I actually used to teach a choir in real life. But anyway, but also I love teaching those outside of the church. And what I find interesting is that, like you said, there's sometimes more receptivity
in the world
to that. Yes. And my heart's position is actually to be obedient. And sometimes it's still a little scary when I go into certain environments. Sometimes I actually have had bodyguards. and sometimes some environments are pretty hostile, but I know that there's going to be fruit from this. And it's that obedience and that vulnerability that allows someone else through God to be set free. And that's why I keep doing this, but it's the church that breaks my heart the most. Like, you are the ones who are supposed to know.
Right.
We have the word. It's not like it's some elusive thing. We have the word of God. People just rather not spend time because, I don't know, they don't want the Holy Spirit conviction, whatever the reason may be, but they're veering from the one source that gives us the rock solid, constant biblical worldview that the world needs.
You know, I look at kind of social media and all that that plays into. We've become such a polarized nation, largely because of algorithms, right? Algorithms now only feed people who think one particular thing. They only feed them information that they agree with. So you end up having all these different divergent personalities, divergent viewpoints. But because of the algorithms, they're all being fed only what they see. And so then conflict comes and they don't even know how to handle conflict because they've been living in this shielded algorithm designed reality that makes them think, well, everybody thinks the same thing as me. Well, no, that's not the case. And then in that, what I've found is that we've lost the art of disagreeing with love. Mm-hmm. Like the idea where I can have a different viewpoint than you. You can have a different viewpoint from me. And I'm going to still have affection for you. If truth is true, I don't necessarily have to fight about it. Right. If there's a component of our faith that is Holy Spirit driven, I'm going to let the Holy Spirit do the work on that.
Right.
My job is to love. My job is to care. My job is to present, but to do so in a caring manner. You know, when you look at a kind of scripture, I'm taken with a number of scriptures on this topic, but out of 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4, it talks about this idea that, and it says just at the beginning of the God of this world has blinded their eyes, right? That there's like literally a veil that hangs before them that they're unable to see the truth that God has presented in his word and being lived out in society. And I think part of our role is to lift that veil, right? Part of our role is to really try to speak truth, but to speak truth with kindness, to speak truth, as it talks about in Ephesians, to speak truth in love.
Right.
It's such a crucial component. Are there certain subjects that become taboo or hard to deal with of the subjects that you're working through? Is there anything that's really, like right now you're seeing it being a difficult subject to present in any circle? Is that gender? Is that race? Are they all pretty equal?
Well, it's not easy to discuss most of those, but we're not hesitant to address any of these. We write extensively about all these issues, about sexuality, about gender, about, you know, free speech, about racism. I mean, so The problem is, and I find this amazing, I'll have Christians tell me, wow, you're just so bold. And I'm thinking, isn't this how we all should be?
Yeah.
And I understand we can all do it differently. I have a different platform than people, but shouldn't this be the position of Christians to be able to be bold? Isn't that what we're called to be? And so it mystifies me sometimes.
Right.
But speaking that truth in love, it is a challenge. As a creative, it's definitely a challenge because it's so much easier to do the name calling. It's so much easier to sling mud. And especially with issues that are just so vile, like when you think of sexuality, you think of the body mutilating puberty blockers and surgeries on minors. And it's so, to me, so vile and so evil. And I know it breaks the heart of God, but how do you address this while still upholding the dignity of people who don't believe the same thing that you do, or those who've gone through, like a colleague, former transgender Walt Heyer, who's gone through all the irreversible physical transformations and has his heart is now back and just kind of embraced by truth now because he no longer has the position, the disposition, I guess, that he had because of the gender dysphoria. Mm. How do we as Christians love people through this? And we certainly don't love them through this by aiding and abetting the self-destruction. We don't help it by being silent when we should be speaking something into. And that's the fear. And people kind of get this weird false compassion. I'm being loving. I'm being tolerant. Well, look, there's a difference between love and tolerance. Love lifts people out of their circumstances. Tolerance keeps people where they are and pretends that there are no circumstances. I don't want to be tolerant. I want to be loving. Mm-hmm. And I certainly want somebody to be loving to me. Yeah, at first we kind of rebuff it. We're like, thank you. I don't need the constructive criticism. But we need it. We need someone to approach us with love because we need to hear that truth. There are so many people shackled, not even realizing that they are. And we may be that one person because of that simple conversation, because of just those few words of hope, are able to be set free from that. Don't we want to play a role in that?
Right. I look at the book of Acts, one very poignant section that talks about the idea, we are neither Greek nor Jew, we are neither slave nor free. And it's this mindset where the world is almost like, well, not even almost, the world is designed with kind of pre-designed barriers for us to be separated from each other. So in Christian circles, we should so raise up Christ, we should so raise up Jesus that every other barrier is a minor speed bump. Like it's just, it should be nothing. And to the world, it has to be preaching the truth in love. It just has to be, right?
Right.
So what's next for Radiance Foundation? Do you guys have more big plans here in the future?
We do. Well, one, because of what's going on with post-Dobbs landscape, we've got states that have now enshrined abortion as a right. And this is much harder to undo than simply a state law. There's a lot of work to undo, but we realize, and we're seeing these numbers, you know, with some of these amendments passing with 55 to 60% of the vote, we've got a public opinion issue. We've got a spiritual, well, of course, we know this is a spiritual issue first and foremost, but there's a lot to undo. So part of that is some of our new messaging campaign. We have a lifehaspurpose.org billboard campaign that we're going to be launching nationwide. We did a few states over the past few weeks, but we're going to be launching a massive ad campaign there. We have our Adopted and Loved initiative, which we love. We actually give grants to Christian families, married mother and father. And these are significant grants to families seeking to adopt because we're huge proponents of adoption. Wow. We have a ministry to birth moms called Sally's Lambs, which cherishes birth moms by celebrating adoption, celebrating her courageous decision. So there are a number of things that we're doing. Of course, we're always engaged in just all these different issues with our op-eds and how we address these things. We have, hopefully, a book coming out from an author by the name of, okay, it's me, something I've been working on for a long time to actually deals with just the whole thing with race. And I wanted to bring this perspective because there's no scarcity of books about race, racism, and unfortunately very unbiblical approaches. But we're really excited about this next book. It will be coming out hopefully by Juneteenth, awesome. Which was the date that I was adopted.
Was it really?
And it gives us an opportunity to be able to talk about, Juneteenth and how America has changed so radically and beautifully since the days of slavery. We're obviously the greatest nation on earth. That's why everybody flocks to us. But I'm hoping to get that book done that not only talks about issues of race, but it also, it will be I'll be sharing my story of adoption and how people can see this. You've got this beautiful mixture, this amalgamation of people from different backgrounds and different struggles, and how God, like you're saying, neither Greek nor Jew, slave and free. I mean, this is, my family is the, I don't know, the literal example mm-hmm. of this mixture. And I just can't wait for this book and through the work that we do through the Radiance Foundation for people to get more of a, I mean, we were literally the Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, where he talked about black boys and black girls playing with white boys and white girls as brothers and sisters. That quote is literally our family. I just want more people to see that so they can take this abstract sort of thing that has separated us for so long and make it tangible and how we can unite. And the only thing that we can unite under and unite with is the gospel. That's Christ.
Amen. Ryan, hey, listen, we so appreciate you and your bride standing on the front lines on some of the biggest issues that our culture, that our society is facing, and bringing biblical truth into the middle of it. And so, Ryan, hey, it has been great to have you on the show. So glad to be able to discuss things and to catch up after a whole lot of years.
A few years.
In between. So great to have you here on the show.
Thanks so much. God bless.
God bless. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joy of Leadership podcast. Living in the center of God's will is a rare blessing in today's day and age. Help us share this vital story of passionate leadership. If you would like to comment on the show, or if you know someone who would be a perfect guest, contact us at thejoyofleadership@gmail.com. If you like the show and don't want to miss a single episode, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.